And welcome to this special edition here of the Fanboy Garage. It's really not even like an episode. It's just Aaron and I getting together to discuss this little movie you may have heard about that came out yesterday as we record this. Zack Snyder's Justice League. We couldn't let this day go by without throwing out our thoughts on this movie, since, you know, we've been talking about it now for a few weeks and years, seemingly, and all the build-up and everything. And I was originally going to wait, Aaron, until Saturday morning to watch this, because I was like, well, there's no way that I'm going to be able to watch it Thursday night. I thought maybe Friday night possibility, and that's when we're recording this, actually. But by the time I got home Thursday, it was early enough, and like I felt like the whole world had already watched it. So I was like,
it's amazing what social media does, right?
It is. And I was like, you know what, I mean, as much as I've done a good job of avoiding Twitter recently, I was like, you know what, I don't want to have to, I'm not going to go another couple of days without being able to talk to anybody about it, without being able. So I was like, let me just, I have time, let me just watch it. And if it's a struggle to get through, it's a struggle. It's going to be a struggle whether it's Saturday morning or whether it's Thursday night.
Right.
So here we are. We both got a chance to watch it on Thursday.
Yeah, I watched it bright and early.
Yeah.
Thursday morning. Well, I say bright and early, and it took me into the afternoon, and then I had to I had to stop. I had other things like work going on.
There you go.
I mean, almost made it all the way through. In the morning time to see the whole thing, but I had to stop right at the epilogue, and then I picked that up later on in the afternoon.
Yeah, I actually was I was able to get through it in one shot. I did not pause it once. I did not take a break. I started it around, I don't know, maybe 20 after 6 p.m. and I finished it at, you know, 20 after 10. And yeah, the only thing I did was shift positions on the couch a few times.
Wow.
But yeah, other than that, no, I got through
it
all.
Without drinking water? Jeez.
Well, I did drink water. I mean, okay. But yeah.
Without going to the bathroom?
Part of the. No, I didn't have to do that.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm not even going to lie. Like, I drink a lot of water. Like, I drink so much water. So I knew I was going to the bathroom, but, you know, I'll be honest, like, and we'll get into this. A couple of times as I was going to the bathroom, I was like, damn, this movie's so long, because I was looking at the timestamps, and I was like, man, I still have 2 hours left. I still have an hour and whatever. And now you can see how frequently I was going to the bathroom. A couple of times I was kind of like, oh, man, I'm still just getting into this thing. Like, I'm not even halfway there.
Yeah. So but people didn't, obviously they're not tuning in now to hear about our bathroom habits. Let's get into it. So I really enjoyed this movie. And I mentioned on Twitter that I enjoyed it in ways that I thought I might and in ways that I didn't think I would. You know, this, I tried to avoid as much as possible, as far as hearing about it. I didn't read any reviews beforehand, didn't care. And in fact, that's pretty much how I think I'm going to be going forward. Like, I really don't care about reviews, and I'm going to get into that a little bit later. But I didn't really get much feedback other than what we mentioned on last episode, where, like, you know, some of the early word, non-spoilery word and stuff like that was positive and all of that. So I just had a general vibe, and I avoided all, like, communication with, like, friends and stuff on Twitter. So I didn't really know what any, like, what you or, like, any, like, our people had thought about it. But I really enjoyed it. I feel like this was by far, for me anyway, the best of the Snyder DC films. And I feel like it might be my new favorite Snyder film, period. It's really well made. And, you know, clearly it is the, you know, creator's vision, right? So, sure, I mean, there are going to be things that you'll be able to nitpick, because when a creator has full control over their vision, like, you know, listen, writers have editors, musicians have producers. There's always has to be somebody that should maybe man, maybe a little bit less of that, a little bit more of that, like, you know, without really interfering. Right. But for the most part, considering that this was essentially, like, you know, really his vision on this, I was really impressed. And I like a lot of, you know, I didn't love BVS, obviously, as a follow-up to Man of Steel, but I really like this as a follow-up to BVS. Mm-hmm. And I like where the characters went here. I felt like some of the issues that I had with BVS was the characterizations of some of the heroes and some of the choices. But here, man, I really like the motivations. I like the depictions of the characters. I thought that they were much more even keeled as far as like the dark and the light being balanced. You know, it was less of a focus on like the flawed god, the flawed hero, the fallen god concept, you know, and this was really more of a, like a real, like in a way, like a traditional, like hero team up. This was a big epic superhero team up movie, where all of these great DC characters come together. And, I'm not even going to get into it. Obviously it's infinitely better than the theatrical thing, right? I don't even bother getting into that. There's no reason to even bother getting into that. That part I figured, right? But what amazed me was just how different in a lot of ways that certain things were. Like, I mean, I knew that Cyborg's arc was going to be very different, right? Because we'd been built up for that. But like the Flash was different. Like I wasn't expecting that. You know, like, so that's one of those things that wasn't expecting. And there were a couple of moments where I actually kind of jumped off the couch excited, like, which that doesn't happen often for me. And it hadn't happened really much for me in Man of Steel or BVS, even though I like Man of Steel. But it happened here for me. And in that, like, that battle scene when they're battling Steppenwolf, you know, at the, well, towards the end, I guess we'll say. Yeah, or at the end, right, if you don't count the epilogue.
Yeah.
I mean, the scene where Superman pops in and, like, saves Cyborg and, like, blocks the axe. And
he's like, I'm not impressed.
Awesome. Amazing. Yeah, that's a dope scene. And then when Aquaman impales Steppenwolf with the trident and Wonder Woman, I mean, cuts his head off. And the head rolls into Darkseid and he steps on it and crushes it, like... That might be one of the best things I've ever seen in a superhero movie, live action superhero movie. Like I just could not have been happier with that. And so they,
you know, from there, I mean, there's, for me, there's lots to like about this movie. There was, you know, the battle scenes were epic on all fronts. You know,
yes.
The battle at Themyscira is amazing.
Yes, it is.
Again, and I was always like, that was an interesting scene, but you know, it's way more extensive. You really understand the stakes in this, you know, with the queen, you know, kind of waging war and kind of the whole. I mean, just that whole scene, like she has to basically kill all of her people. In the effort of stopping Steppenwolf, and he still emerges from the scene. I mean, that scene is, I mean, I literally wrote dope AF, because I enjoyed that whole, it was like that football scene.
Yeah.
And he's throwing horses and whatnot, but they're, you know, they're trying to stay one step ahead of him. I thought that was great. And that's like, you know, that's pretty much in the beginning, I don't even know when that was, but you know,
yeah,
it's like in the beginning of the movie. Yeah, you know, the it's funny in thinking about Joss Whedon's stuff versus Zack Snyder's. I mean, it is obvious, and it was always going to be this. As I said last week, it's going to be a night and day thing. And you know, 15 seconds better of anything that Zack Snyder puts together is going to be, you know, a tremendous amount better than anything Joss Whedon put together in that film.
Right.
Because it is utter trash juice.
Yes.
But I can almost see what, you know, a character like the Flash, for example, I could see him looking at that character and going, okay, I see some of the humorous strokes that were kind of written here. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to dial that up to 11. Right. I'm going to make you the most annoying character in the film.
Yes.
And because it's funny. It's for laughs.
Yes.
And, you know, that is a lazy ass approach.
Yes, it is.
It diminished actually a lot of the, you know, I wrote this to myself in the notes about, you know, some of the commentary that Zack Snyder and others have said about the hero of Cyborg being the heart of the film. And mm-hmm. I was like, is he? Because I'll tell you, I felt so connected to the Flash.
Yeah.
I felt like there was something I did not expect that and maybe it was because they said, oh, Cyborg is the heart. And yeah. I kind of was like, oh, I see what you're saying. Like he, you know, he wants to make sure everyone is good.
Sure.
He's trying to take care of people.
And there's the story arc with his dad, and that plays a big role in the motivations for a lot of what they're doing.
Barry, the fear, the innocence in Barry is there. The, you know, his parental connection, right? Wanting to do something, anything for his father as best as he can and show him that. And then that comment about you can't be looking back, Barry, you have to look ahead. And that, you know, when that all clicks for him, that's a beautiful scene.
Yeah.
And like just the way that all of his film, his scenes are shot, are great. So yeah, to me, I'm like, if there's anything, it's not even a restore the Snyderverse, you know, chant coming from me. I'm like, give me the Flash. Like,
yeah. Well, and you're getting the Flash
ready for the, which is cool, but like, I needed that yesterday.
Here's the thing though. I loved the way Cyborg and Flash worked together.
Yeah.
Especially when you consider like their motivations, right? And it's unfortunate that Ray Fisher is good in this. And and the Cyborg arc is good. It's really effective. And that character is like, I mean, geez, I loved that character in this movie. And I was like, hey, I'd like to see more of this character. And that's not something I would have expected, especially after what happened with the theatrical. You know, like we didn't really get it. Even the motivations of the origin rather is like, not only expanded on, but like really changed and developed, and it ties into the rest of the movie. But unfortunately, we're not seemingly going to get Ray Fisher in the Flash movie like we thought we would. And I would have loved to have seen more of that. I really enjoyed them in particular. I mean, the scene where he's connected to the mother box, and you know Barry's doing his thing about, you know, with getting to light speed, faster than light speed or whatever. Like that was great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was some really good stuff. I mean, you know, overall, there's so much more dimension to these characters. Even Steppenwolf and his motivations of trying to get back
completely
in the good graces
different.
Of Darkseid, you know, all of that stuff was missing.
Yeah, and even the
and you know, I mean, I was gonna say, I think I also wrote this because I took a shit ton of notes while I was watching this film, and you know, look, I'm not making any excuses for Joss Whedon whatsoever.
Or the powers that be that were really also, you know, responsible
for exactly. But I will say this. Cutting this movie into the theatrical version was a thankless job. Like, having to be given the parameters that Whedon was given about, you're going to take this film and you're going to get it to, like, however short it was, an hour and 20-something minutes – and write more humor and like whole, like that's a job set for failure. There's no way.
Although
he's gonna be successful.
Having said that, probably not, but still, like, you know, and you mentioned before, and I'm glad you brought it up, the humor thing, right?
Yeah.
So perfect, you know, tie into what you just said. Like there's humor in this movie.
Oh yeah.
Not a ton. But enough, you know, not more than there should have been, but it's there. Right. It's there at the right time, and it kind of breaks up the monotony and the tension a little bit. And that's really how you should be using humor in movies like this. Whereas what they did was targeted humor in theatrical.
Yeah.
You know, so it was just like, okay, this is joke.
Right.
And,
right.
you know, and this was like the humor here was natural. It fit the characters, it fit the moment, and it just, it was really well done. And it's funny, when I was watching this, after, geez, maybe like an hour or so, an hour and a half, I thought to myself, man, you know, I have not really rewatched the theatrical Justice League much. I think maybe once or twice, maybe all the way through since I saw it in theaters. I didn't remember much about it. I mean, I remembered like the opening scene with Batman with the parademon. And I remembered like Aquaman sitting on the lasso of truth, right? And
right.
Like,
that was actually funny.
It was, but like I remember, I didn't remember much. So like it was really weird. So for me, it was really like watching a whole new film. I mean, look, Steppenwolf's motivations, like you mentioned, are different and expand. I mean, they're not different in the sense that, yes, he's here to collect the mother boxes, but that's completely expanded on because it's tied into Darkseid, which wasn't a part of the theatrical, right?
Right. You know, for me, the major differences in this is that it is a film you know, the Snyder Cut is a film wrapped in context, wrapped in color.
Yep.
You know, wrapped in character development and foil.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that is largely absent.
Completely absent, yeah.
From the theatrical cut. What you got was like, you know, that fake popcorn shit, the airless popcorn stuff that they pop, and you're like, what is this phony baloney bullshit? I want that butter. I want that flavor. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, what this film was. You know, I think if he did not have full control of this, and this were just a normal, this movie, you know, would certainly have been cut. Because it's funny because I hate to say fat because fat sounds bad, but there is a lot of fat to this film.
Sure. Well, it's a 4-hour movie. I mean,
there's a lot to digest there, but it's not, there was not a point where I'm like, well, like, why are we,
right?
Why are we kind of doing this? I think there were some tactics used in the filming of the movie that I think extended this. Like, everything is, I mean, there's so many things in slow motion.
Yes, and now I have
and
a
that,
theory
that started
too.
To get on my nerves, and I started to pick it out very easily. Well, obviously you're picking it out easily because it's happening, but like, I'm like, oh my god, you know, Lois Lane's getting coffee and it's in slow motion.
Yeah.
Okay, you know, and, like there were a couple of moments where I was like, what the what is this?
I
the
don't
whole
disagree.
Aquaman singing thing.
Yeah, there is a lot of that was weird, but you know, that's all stylized stuff, and that's going to tie into something that I wanted to talk to. We're not going to get into it yet, but that Ron Diesel had mentioned to us regarding what the studio execs may have seen that they thought was unwatchable. I have some theories on that, but kind of tying
let's
back.
Let's continue talking about some of the good stuff though.
Yeah. Let's talk about, so here's the thing for me on this. Also, in addition to Steppenwolf's motivations, what I really loved was the fact that, you know, we get that long explanation from Diana about the mother boxes, like, and their history and their significance. And it's like, okay, that's what we needed. Like, yes. Like, okay, now these things are no longer just like a MacGuffin, right? They're no, I mean, I guess technically they are in the sense, but it's like, they're now no longer these things that are just being collected just because we need to have a villain and a kind of a motivation. That was great. I loved that part. And I think at that moment was when I realized that I was really enjoying the movie. Like when she's there giving like that history and that explanation, and we're seeing that amazing battle, right?
Yeah, that battle was so
good. Oh my god! Like, you talk about like a fan's like dream type. I mean, the amount of things that were happening in that scene. There's Green Lanterns in there, and there's Zeus is in there, and
yeah.
Oh man,
I was saying, you know, like if when it comes down to like epic battles, like. Yeah, Zack Snyder has such a visual eye for that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
it's beautiful. It's masterful.
Yeah,
you know, it really is, because you feel engaged. Like that scene where the Lantern gets his hand cut off, and I think it's Steppenwolf. He reaches, or no, is it Darkseid?
It's Darkseid when the ring starts to fly away. Yeah.
And then it like zooms out, you know, flies away. And I was like, oh shit! Like I was like, oh shit! He's gonna get the, you know, he's gonna get a ring. He's gonna crush it or something like that.
Absolutely.
You know, he's total badass. And then, you know, the thing with Zeus. What I loved about that scene was like, so David Thewlis,
mm-hmm.
who plays Ares in Wonder Woman, pops up as Ares in this.
Yes.
It's very quick. It's a very quick and you miss it thing. But I was like, I like that. That's a nice touch. Sure. Like I see what he was doing and I see why, you know, the fingerprints of Zack Snyder's work, his influence outside of casting, because mm-hmm. that's a big thing.
Sure.
It's still on these characters.
Mm-hmm.
Still on a lot of the stories that are being told right now. In this current version of the DC universe.
Yeah, and, you know, it's amazing. And we've always said that regardless of what we may have felt about certain character directions and things like that, Zack Snyder, obviously, his films look amazing. And, I mean, there are things in this, that battle included is, like, things like I would frame that and put it up on my wall. Oh, yeah. You know, like, these are, like, oh, my God, just amazing-looking stuff. But other things, the runtime, right? So these are the things that a lot of people are talking about right now. So, you know, I had put up on Twitter that I said, you know, is it long? Yes. Look, it's 4 hours. It's long. 4 hours is long. 4 hours of anything is long, right? If it was a baseball game, it would still be long at 4 hours. Is it too long? I said maybe. And I didn't say maybe because I felt like there's a chance that I thought it might have been too long. The only reason why I said maybe is because, and you kind of mentioned it before, like you could have cut this movie down to like 3 hours and 15 minutes and it wouldn't have affected I don't think the movie at all. Like there's a like parts of the first hour I thought you could have almost lost like half of that and it really wouldn't have changed anything. The epilogue, like the second half of that epilogue, that like which was a lot of the newer stuff that he filmed, like the Batman Joker thing, which I didn't even really think was that great after all this.
None.
Like you could have cut all of that and it still would have been a really good movie. It's still a good movie. Like it didn't make the movie worse for me. So that's why, but it, you know, it still would have been good on its own, even without that. So that's why I said maybe, but it's not slow at all. Like I didn't feel like this was a chore to get through. And mm-hmm. I sat there and watched it straight through. And the best comparison I can make is that this movie is like a car that is driving at exactly the speed limit.
Mm.
It's going at a nice, steady pace. And there may be people that think that that's slow because they want to go way above the speed limit. But it's ultimately not. And some people will think that that's just a right pace. And that's kind of how I look at this. Like for me, I thought it was paced fine. And I, you know, despite the fact that it's 4 hours long, I didn't find it to be a chore to get through. I didn't get bored at really any point. And there wasn't a point where I was like, oh my God, come on, let's just get to something. No, like I really liked it. And even with the chapter points, like I still think cause it was clearly made to be a film and I think it works better in that format. I enjoyed it more in this format. And this is something that kind of surprised me. It's one of those things where I actually don't know that I would have enjoyed it as much if it was like 4 or 6 episodes,
chapters,
like distinct hours that I would have had to have watched like weeks at a time. Like I enjoyed it in this form, which that's one of those things that really kind of caught me off guard.
Yeah. I'm kind of torn. I know on Twitter, I was like, the episodic format would have worked nicely because I think people would have found more time to enjoy it. But the way that it's structured, you're going to, if it were episodic, I think that people would be more disappointed because you expect context battle. You know what I'm saying? Like you expect some sort of conclusion when you wrap up an episode, like, okay, here's the problem of the episode.
And sure.
Something to that effect. And, none of that is there.
Right. Exactly.
You know, going back to the runtime, there were some things that I was like, these are nice to haves. And I'm sure, again, if this were if we were in a perfect world and none of that shit happened to Zack Snyder, and you know, the studio execs said, all right, you can, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that would have been cut, like Martian Manhunter, for example. That was nice. It was cool to see him.
That was all new footage, though, too, right?
Yeah. Not really. You know? He didn't really do anything cool. But, like, new footage as in, like, because here's the thing that I'm struggling with.
Well, meaning, like, it was part of the reshoots that he did.
Yeah, part of the reshoots to complete what he had envisioned for this film. So, yeah. Like, it was in there as a point to say, in the next film, Martian Manhunter will play a more serious role,
or maybe it would have gotten there anyway. Like, that was his thing with the Joker. Was like, he's like, I think we would have eventually gotten to a point where Batman and the Joker met. So right. That's why I tried to kind of tie all that up and give right. you all of that.
But even the addition of Martian Manhunter was like, sure.
Yeah, it didn't.
It doesn't do anything.
It was fan. It was a fun little fan. A little nod. Thing. Yeah.
There are, let me think, hold on. Again, going back to The Flash real quick, like, gosh, man, that was where, to me, like, that's where Zack Snyder shined the most.
Mm-hmm.
I know I mentioned the slow motion stuff, but, like, for a character like The Flash,
yeah,
who's moving so fast,
sure.
That's where slow motion works really well.
Yes.
But it is in the way that, like, I was captivated every time he was moving.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that scene where he's introduced, which was, you know, cut completely from right. the theatrical version, was so necessary to me.
Absolutely.
It was so necessary because it shows his quirkiness. It shows he's trying to get that job.
Yep.
The hot dog.
Yes.
I thought was hilarious.
Yes.
You know, he's like, I'm like, what the hell is he
and
doing with the hot dog?
And just totally fitting and not out of character, right?
Perfect, for, yeah. Then, you know, then he's like, he basically bursts out of his shoes when he starts running.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, as he comes back, he's all surrounded by the dog, so nobody notices he has no shoes on. And then there's that connection to Iris West, which I just, sure. you know, that's awesome.
And you know, the funny thing is with that, like, that's a scene, and again, we know that got cut out of the theatrical. And my question is, and I know I said in the beginning I didn't really want to get into compare, but I guess it's unavoidable. But, like, why was it cut out of the theatrical? Like, that's one of those scenes where it's like, are you going to tell me that just because Iris West was in the scene and they felt like they didn't want to go, like, that route and they weren't going to, like, why was it cut? Like, because
I mean, there's that controversy about she people does, of color. Well, like
again, that aside, right, because maybe that's what it was, but maybe not. We don't know, yeah. But... And hopefully that's not what it was, because that's just vile. But but let's just say they took it out because whatever. They're like, well, we're not going to be going this, because DC was like fed up. The studio was fed up with the universe and didn't want any connections to right. something that may come down the road. I don't know.
Right.
But the point is, like, in the context of this film, it doesn't, like, Iris West doesn't play a role other than that.
Right.
And it still was a great scene, and it was, like you said, it was needed, and it was perfect, and it yeah. set the tone, and it established so much about the character. Like, would it have really, like, it wouldn't have altered the theatrical version that much, right? I mean, it would,
yeah.
So these are the types of things that's, like, maddening.
It's funny because, like, I say it's necessary, but, I'm just playing devil's advocate here. If I were in the shoes, and I look there and go, okay, that's like a 10-minute scene. Right. And what are the key takeaways that we learn? Okay, so we learn that he's the Flash. We learn that he's out saving people. We learn that that he has a very quirky demeanor and personality. All of that stuff, right? That kind of gets summarized in the first moment he meets Batman,
mm-hmm.
in a way. I mean, again, super surface, no context, lacking color, but that kind of gets all wrapped up in that one introduction scene between the two of them. And then Joss Whedon reshot some scenes in that one in particular to kind of bolster that quirkiness, that weird, you know, the weird annoyingness of the Flash, because that's where he can, again, dial it up on the humor. So yeah. I think, you know, I look, cutting that scene is tremendously hurt.
Sure.
that character.
And it didn't seem like they cared. Because, again, they'd seemed like they were writing off the future at that point, the Flash and Cyborg and anything that didn't factor into something that was already being made, like Aquaman, for instance, or Wonder Woman at that moment. And, you know, even the character motivations, like we mentioned how, like, these were not, well, I don't say they're not damaged heroes, because they certainly have baggage, no doubt. But it was baggage that was appropriate. Like, right, I mean, it's not anything different from their versions of their comic book origins and whatnot, over the years and at the time. But, like, even Wonder Woman has the great scene, you know, after she saves, like, the school kids. Mm-hmm. And the little girl goes, you know, and says, "Can I be like you someday?" And she's like, "You could be anything you want." Like, that type of stuff, we got to see that. And, again, that's some of that stuff.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Awesome. And it's like that's the stuff that, like, I felt was kind of missing from BVS that was in this movie, that hope. And hope. Again, maybe the plan was always to get there. And I guess it was, obviously, because this would have been the movie, right,
that followed it. But we have to remember that at some point that hope gets dashed because we're supposed to go full on, you know, dark Superman.
Well, that's fine. Shit. But again, I mean, it's okay to go back and forth, but give me something to feel, to care about first, so then I can be upset when it goes bad. Like, that's always been my thing.
That high scene.
Oh, that was amazing.
That's better than anything I saw in Wonder Woman 84.
Not even close, dude.
I mean, the way that she was like zipping around on her knees, blocking that. And I know that there was some of that in the theatrical cut, but like, holy shit, that's awesome.
Yeah.
It was so good.
Yes, it was. Yeah, Wonder Woman, I mean, not that she hasn't been great, but she was great in this. And
her theme is like blaring. It was good stuff. It was like awesome. I mentioned this on Twitter.
I know where you're going with this.
You know exactly where I'm going.
And I agree, yeah.
That Amazonian whale cry thing.
Overdone.
That was happening every time.
Yeah.
Like, it started to bother the shit out of me. And then at one point when it happens, I laughed about it.
Yeah, there's even a moment in the battle scene with Steppenwolf, which, again, it's just all kinds of awesome happening, right? Yeah. But then, like, she kind of does
a slow motion,
like, jump over, and it happens, but in the middle of, like, the regular score.
Yeah.
And it was like, wow, that was really, did we need that? Like, that was a little weird. But again, I mean, look, it's for a movie. You're always going to be, there's things we can nitpick. I don't mind nitpicking when about a movie that I really enjoyed, because there really aren't very many movies out there that I can't find something. I mean, look, you can go back to the Nolan Batman films and Donner Superman. There's nitpicky things about those movies too, right? That you're going to sit there and pick out. That's the least of the issues. But yeah, I definitely know where you're going with that.
Yeah, I was like, oh, it's so annoying.
Yeah.
You know, there weren't many things that annoyed me, or, you know, that I can nitpick, because you know I do love to nitpick.
Yeah.
I wrote it down because I was laughing to myself about Aquaman. First of all, great character. Like, you really get a sense that he wants absolutely nothing to do with Atlantis.
Right.
But he knows, he's fully aware of everything that's been happening there. And, you know, it's great to see William Dafoe back as Falco.
Which was really supposed to be the first time that we see him, technically, right? In continuity, anyway.
Yeah. Right. And the funny thing is, you would have not known any, I mean, because there's really no introduction to him at all, so you don't really know who he is or what he does, what his purpose is. He's just kind of there as a steward. But I wrote down this, and again, funny as hell. I was like, wait. Where does Aquaman get all of his clothes from? Why is he always throwing them on the side of the
that's water? Funny. Yeah.
I'm like, how many times have you taken off your shirt, man?
Well, yeah. I mean, if I looked like that, I wouldn't own a shirt.
Well, then again, you know, like, dude takes off his sweater. The girl's sniffing that stuff. What the heck? Is this an Axe commercial? Is it Old Spice? What's happening here? They're all singing to him.
So, that's funny.
Yeah.
I just want to get a couple things before. So I do want to talk about the thing that Ron Diesel was talking to us about, which is this idea that, like, you know, what were like those Warner Brothers executives thinking when they said that they, when the test screening that they saw was unwatchable. So I have some thoughts on this, and mainly I think the key to answering that, or to at least coming up with a philosophy on it anyway, I mean, only they can ultimately answer that question, but right. is not looking at it with 2021 eyes. Looking at it with 2017 yeah. eyes and putting yourself into the context of the time. Now, I'm not saying whether it's right or wrong, but I'm saying that those you had a bunch of studio executives in 2017 that were at that point not happy with Snyder and his vision. They were not happy with the box office returns of BVS. They were not happy right. with – you could argue that maybe they weren't even that happy with the Man of Steel box office returns, which is why BVS wound up being what it – it was, right, which was supposed to be a sequel to Man of Steel, and it turned out to be more, right? And we were kind of rushing to Justice League type of right. thing. And they kind of went in there jaded, I believe, and they were looking to almost sort of like wash their hands of this whole thing, and they were thinking of Marvel and the Avengers movies and all of that stuff. So now they're yeah. sitting down, and you could only imagine, like, watching what they were watching with all of that slow-mo, right, and all of the Snyder stylized stuff, like where every scene yeah. almost has like a stylized thing about it, whether it's a weird camera angle or a pop song or a slow-mo thing. And they're probably saying to themselves, like, oh, crap, it's just 3 hours or more of like all this. Say, this isn't what we want at all. And I think that's what they meant. That's my theory on it. Like, what they meant by unwatchable was like, this isn't at all what we want this universe to be now. We're not happy with mm-hmm. it. We didn't want this to be a continuation of the same thing. And it wouldn't have mattered, I don't think. I mean, Zack Snyder could have shown, if he would have been better off just showing them like a print of the first Avengers movie. Mm-hmm. And saying this is going to be what my Justice League movie is about, because I think that's just where their mentality was at the time. I do think it's difficult to look back, and I do think that, though, interestingly enough, hindsight plays a role in this. For me, I think I don't know, because again, there's no reference for it, but like, the debacle that was the theatrical version of Justice League, right? Mm-hmm. And the even like Wonder Woman 84, right? Seeing what happens when you go all in on like the light tone, right? And mm-hmm. you go all in on like something that, like, I feel like this movie now was almost more satisfying to me than maybe it would have been to me back then with the eyes that I had at that time in 2017. Agree with that. Yeah, and I do think that that played a big role in my reaction to this.
Yeah.
And I think that all ties together. I that's why I've been saying on the show in the weeks building up to this that, like, I was ready for this because I just felt like this was the time. Like, we haven't had a lot of superhero stuff. We've had a lot of Marvel stuff. Wonder Woman 84 was a big disappointment. And it's like, you know what? I like now. I'm ready to see these versions of these characters again. And it was in the most satisfying way possible because, again, this was better. Just better. This was just the best thing Snyder's done in this universe. So, right. I think that's a big part of where this is with the studio execs. I mean, sure, you could have said, hey, listen, they would have been better off releasing like a 3 hour or 3 hour and 15 minute version of this at the time. Maybe not. I mean, yeah. Who knows? It's just the world was a very different place back then in a lot of ways, 100%. You know? And I think that, being able to watch it at home too, one other thing too to talk about is the aspect ratio, which I know a lot of people were talking about, and it caught a lot of people off guard. For me, it wasn't an issue, mainly for two reasons. One, because I had seen that interview with Zack Snyder on IGN, and he had mentioned that they shot the film in 1:4:3, which is IMAX ratio, mm-hmm. which is much closer to what we call 4:3, which is really 1:3:3 aspect ratio, which is what, you know, we've watched TV on for years, right, prior to widescreen. It's much closer to that than 1.78, 1.85, or 2.10, or whatever, like the true widescreen ratios. So I had a feeling it was going to look like that, Also, I watch a lot of old television still. And even stuff that's been remastered in HD, like Star Trek, the original series, and The Next Generation, or the Batman 66 show, or even Batman the Animated Series. Even though it's remastered in HD, they keep it in its traditional, its intended format. So, it, like, it to me, it wasn't really that weird. And I actually think it looked good.
I didn't even faze me.
Yeah.
In the watching. The other, the one thing I wanted to add related to, you know, the executive reaction. So dig in a little bit more on the comparisons between, you know, what was existing at the time, you know, at or around the time of the release of this film or after BVS, and tie it into something related to what you said about the performance of BVS at that time, right? So BVS was right up against what was it? Captain America: Civil War. Right, that's a $1 billion movie. That right. came, and that I think that movie, when you watch, if you were to watch Captain America: Civil War, starts right off with action. Right, heroes are like in the mix and shit's going down. That is a completely different film when you think about it through the lens of what was going on with Snyder's film, right? Snyder wanted that slow burn, that slow build, all that context. And it was, I think it was everything that BVS in my mind was missing, which was like enriching the characters, right? So he spent a lot of time and this was probably by design, like pulling them apart essentially, right? Like pulling at some of their insecurities, making Superman a villain, adding fear to Batman, all of those things, and they felt, you know, in that time they put us in a very uncomfortable place. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, if you look at this, to your point and the way you opened this, you know, our episode here was talking about how it was a perfect add-on to BVS because it's stitching all of that back together. There's a lot more happening with those characters. There's a lot more dimension to those characters. You know, one of the things that that I thought was amazing in this movie was when Superman Clark gets, you know, he's getting dressed and he's about to take off flight again in the black suit.
Yep.
And you hear his father's talking to him.
Yep.
And we get some audio from the previous films, and then I do think there was some new stuff in there too, for sure. Or at least new to us because it wasn't a theatrical version.
Sure, yeah.
But like that rise of hope and that rise of like, I am the Superman. I am, you know, I am Earth's savior. A little bit too on the nose with the like Christ-like image as he kind of rises above Earth and, you know, behind the sun and his arms are stretched out and he's in that pose. But I love that stuff. And I was like, this is Superman.
Yep.
He's not the brooding, you know, depressed looking fellow out there. He now knows his place in the world and is taking up the mantle of
sure
of Superman and the savior.
Yeah,
I love that.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I mean, look, I could say that this Justice League, but is, I don't think this was a movie, a version of Justice League that I don't know that, and I'm probably guilty of this myself, that I thought Zack Snyder would make, you know, based on where he was going with some of these characters. And
it's the character, that character stuff.
Yeah.
That I was like, damn, man, like you're shocking me with some of the thoughtfulness in here.
Sure.
And, you know, again, Chris, got the writers and screenplay guys, Chris Terrio, you know, because Chris Terrio right now is not sitting too well in my stomach because he's written some bombs. But like this, there was a lot of love poured into this, a lot of love, a lot of understanding. And that's going to sound weird coming from me, but like actually getting these characters in a different way. And I think that, you know, we you're right. We've got 2021 lenses on. And so you know, what I like seeing with you know, things like WandaVision is the dynamic of someone being a hero but a villain, and understanding the nuances in that.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate that storytelling, and there's a lot of that in this movie.
Yes.
There's a lot of that in this film.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I love pulling that apart a little bit. I love kind of like exploring those things.
Sure.
And that's what makes it so superior in my mind.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's clearly superior.
Well, I mean,
just
in the theatrical sense, but a film worthy of being like the best.
Yeah.
If not one of the best in this, their approach to film.
I think this is great superhero storytelling, flat out.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing here, and we can get into like on our next regular episode, we can get into like what we think the future might hold, if anything, for all of this stuff. Or else we'll wind up going for 3 hours on this. But one thing I did want to address here is critics. Now, the film is getting good reviews. Don't get me wrong. Mostly. One of these things is like, for those people that are like, oh, there are just people out there that don't like Zack Snyder. I mean, it's never been more apparent that that's the case with some of these critics that have not liked this film. Because a lot of the review, and I actually feel like the days of the professional film critic, in a sense, are like where people are going to hang on there, like every word. Like, I think those days are over, and I really think the days of Rotten Tomatoes are kind of over at this point, too, now. Just because I think the way we consume movies and the way we care about movies are just shifting, especially with the pandemic and with streaming and everything like that. But, like, here's one example. Like, I got to get the gentleman's name, but I actually was looking through, and the only reason why this stood out is because it's a local film critic from New York Newsday, local to us anyway, who wrote a negative review of this film, Rafer Guzman. I read his review and I was like, I don't think he saw this movie. Like, I really believe that, I'm not saying he did this, but it's very possible that he could have.
Please give me some snippets.
Well, I'm going to. That's where I'm going, building towards. But like, I feel like the review he wrote, you could have written if you saw the theatrical version and just knew that this was a longer version of that.
Yeah.
Because it. Mm. So like, here's, for instance, he goes into a little bit of like, you know, what the movie is like, as far as like, it's, you know, new stuff and some unseen stuff, blah, blah, blah. And he says the result. Hardly an ounce of difference. Everything that made the original film such a mind number is still there, still here. The generic storyline, for instance, after the death of Superman, a gang of cosmic tyrants begins searching for three alien-made MacGuffins, mother boxes, that will give them unlimited power. To stop them, Bruce Wayne puts together a league of allies. They're a mixed bag. Gal Gadot's Wonder Woman is radiant, while Jason Momoa's Aquaman has his grungy charm, but Ezra Miller's Barry Allen overdoes the awkward teen shtick, and Victor Cyborg Stone remains dour, lifeless, and a scene killer. The new Justice League is still mostly a computer-generated... I can't see what this says here because I didn't get it. ...of hellfire, gunfire, lightning, force fields, and blah, blah, blah. He says, if 2 hours of Zack Snyder's Justice League didn't impress you, 4 hours of Zack Snyder's Justice League probably won't change your mind. Mm-hmm. Fans might see it differently. They're the ones who lobbied for this wholesale reworking and so on and so on. It's like, it's interesting that he actually says, if 2 hours of Zack Snyder's Justice League didn't impress you.
Yeah, because it wasn't.
I mean, I know that Zack Snyder's name is on that film, right? We all know, but for technical reasons. But, I mean, it's not his movie, obviously. So I almost feel like if you, especially based on what he's talking about with The Flash and Cyborg, it feels like he's talking about the 2017 versions of those characters.
Yeah, I mean, so there, okay. The thing about the theatrical and versus Snyder Cut thing, I mean, there's a lot of imagery. There's a lot of scenes that are in the theatrical version, right? They are smushed between rewritten scenes and reshot scenes. But there's still a lot of Snyder stuff in there. That being said, the critique of the Flash and I could kind of see where he's going with Cyborg, but the thing with the Flash is like, no, because he wasn't that awkward.
No, he is in 2017 though.
He is. Yeah. No. 100%. Like, look, at the end of the day, people, reviewers or not, are going to write this movie in their own minds and what they think of it, based on, you know, their exposure to the movement, exposure to how they view these characters,
mm-hmm.
what they want from, you know, studios and how they, you know, characterize these iconic heroes. When that doesn't fit in that vision, they're going to shit all over it. You know?
Yeah, which is fine. But to me, I just, like I said, I feel like, and his only two references to the movie are things that were also in the theatrical version. Like Barry mm-hmm. Allen's moment with his dad. Like, he references Barry Allen having a moment with his dad. And he references something else. So it's like, I almost, to me, like I said, it's just like, you know what? I don't even know that you watched it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, and that's unfortunate. And that's why I just feel like, reviews are, and the only reason why I mention it is because it was such a big talking point when BVS came out, right? And it's when we started to really microanalyze reviews and reviewers, and right? And then we had the battles with the Last Jedi stuff, and then Marvel, how come Marvel movies have good review, blah, 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 back and forth and all this stuff. So it was just like, I just found that interesting. I was like, man, you know, this is why I think we need to spend less time analyzing reviews and more time just talking about the movies and stuff like that, because it's the fans' time now. We exist in a time where we just got a 4-hour Justice League movie, and we're watching Falcon and Winter Soldier. We watched WandaVision for 9 episodes, and Falcon and Winter Soldier now is just debuted six episodes, and it's like, this is a great time to be a fan. Let's just enjoy being fans and not worry about what like everybody else is thinking about it.
It unfortunately is a sign of the times. I mean, it is what it is. Like, you know, everyone is a reviewer. Everyone can be a reviewer, right? They may not be as eloquent as some. I mean, I would actually contradict that by saying that most are not as eloquent as they probably should be.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I agree. I think their relevance in this world, considering when we are dominating our impressions of a film on social media, and a lot of people are influenced by that, clearly, because that's where this entire movement to remake this movie kind of came from. But, you know, it's pointless at this. It doesn't mean anything. People are going to like what they like.
Sure.
When they don't like something, they're going to scream at the top of their lungs that they don't like it, and they're going to shit all over it. I can sometimes be guilty of that.
Yep.
But, yeah, I mean, it. See you later, man. Like,
right.
People are going to, that's not, your comments are not going to stop someone from watching this film.
No. And there was a time where they may have.
Yeah. 100%.
And that's why I think it's important, because, but I think those days are over now. Yeah. Well, or even look, even 4 or 5 years ago.
True. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, maybe not like super diehard fans, but like, people in general, like the general audiences, may have stayed away from something at that years ago because of things like that. And so, yeah, but
the other thing I would say about sort of where we are in terms of like this film and the perspective is that a film like Joker,
mm-hmm.
I think, helped make this a little not, you know, I was gonna say palpable, but there's nothing really like hard to swallow here. But I
no,
think
not
that,
in that sense, no.
Right, but I think you understand where I'm going. I think like it kind of carved out a place of like we can be super dark. We can do certain things. We can tell certain stories of these characters that pushes the boundaries of like where they might fit or sit in your mind from a comic book perspective, yeah, and do something really cool with them.
Yeah.
And the success of that film and seeing some of the direction that was pushed, you know, by Todd Phillips and Joaquin Phoenix on making that film, I think made it a little easier for people to more like widely embrace the Snyder Cut.
Sure.
Beyond the cult. Although, right? Beyond the folks that are championing that stuff.
And here's the thing. I actually was talking to a lot of people about this movie today because like a week ago, and I'm, when I say people, I'm talking about like non like yeah, hardcore fans, people like just people, yeah, outside of the bubble. They were hearing, well, it's rated R. Well, there's a lot of violence and cursing and blah, blah, blah. It's very dark and kids shouldn't watch it. And I was watching it and I'm like, you know what? First of all, this movie is not that dark.
Right.
It's, I mean, yeah, it's not, you know, G-rated. It's not super gory. I mean, there's blood at points. I mean, and there's
Wonder Woman kills a couple of people.
Sure. And there's a beheading, obviously, but like, yeah, again, I'm not saying it's for like, you know, watch, let your 3-year olds watch it and have them have a good time. It's not that, but it's also not that like, look, I remember being a kid, probably, I don't know, 6, 7, however old I was, watching Conan the Barbarian for the first time at home and when, and he beheads Thulsa Doom.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, but like, it didn't mess me up for life. Like, it was like, oh, all right. Like
RoboCop.
Well, yeah.
Where they blow off Murphy's hand.
Exactly.
And shoot him in the head.
Sure. Now, I'm not saying, hey, let your kids watch whatever, but like, I don't think this movie is, I don't think it's crazy.
No.
I mean, not little kids, but I don't think it's crazy to like, let, I don't know what age it would be appropriate, but like, you know, not little kids, but like, you know, younger kid. Like, it's not crazy to think that they could watch. Like, this movie is not this dark, violent, hyper violent, like gory curse fest. Like, I think a lot of people may have thought it would have been.
There's like three F-bombs, 3 or 4 F-bombs in this film.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of funny because I actually wrote this in my little notes. Was like, 2 of them are unnecessary. Completely unnecessary. It's like, no, we're going to go for that rated R. We're going to go for it. So, like, here, we're going to put an F-bomb here. We're going to put an F-bomb over there. And they're like, you know, not needed, really.
No.
Like, the one that comes from Batman at the end. Meh. All right.
Yeah.
The one from Cyborg about, like, F the world.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that was kind of needed.
Right.
In a way. Because, you know, it describes his place.
Yes.
The way he sees things at that moment. And then there's a couple of others that I just were like, nah, that doesn't make any sense.
Right.
The violence is in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly in the beginning. It's done predominantly by Wonder Woman, believe it or not. She's like throwing people into pillars and like breaking them in half.
Yeah.
And like they're laying in pools of blood. And I'm like, okay. That almost turned me off for a hot second, but I was like, whatever, just keep it moving. But then that's kind of it. Like Superman ain't, you know, Superman wasn't punching holes in people.
Yeah, he's not. You're right. By the time we get to see him anyway, be Superman, he's fighting Steppenwolf.
Batman isn't really. I mean, they're destroying the hell out of parademons.
Sure,
like, those are like nothing.
Obviously, yeah.
They don't have souls.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I mean, look, it's clearly more of an adult take just in general, right? I mean, it's not, like I said, it's not for little kids and stuff like that, but it's not like this, like I said, it's not this super hyper dark thing that like you would have to worry about, like even like a 13-year-old watching, right? Or
no.
Something like that. I mean, hopefully that is something that people can understand. Like this is not that. You know, and I just don't want people to get that impression, you know, and give it a shot.
You know, the funny thing is, like BVS is dark.
Yeah.
Like BVS is dark. And this is not that.
No. No.
This is not that at all. There's a lot of introspection. Introspection. Whatever. A lot of, like, internal stuff happening where people are like thinking to themselves and like trying to, you know, understand like, well, what am I supposed to do with myself here? Like even the whole Lois stuff, it's very, very minimal.
Yeah.
But very powerful because it you know, is touching on a little bit of her grief and, you know, she doesn't know what she's doing anymore in her world. You know, the man that she loved is gone. So she's trying to cope with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of that stuff happening. And the one thing that I thought was a Whedon issue, but I guess it wasn't because it was a Snyder thing, was the fact that Bruce Wayne lets Martha lose her house again. I was like, I wrote that down. I was like, damn, man, no one's helping Martha. It gets foreclosed. And then at the end, when Superman comes back, he's like, I guess I'll buy your house back.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, some of those things are like, you know, just to, I guess, to advance the plot and to really have that,
sure,
that moment where Bruce gets to say, well, I bought the bank, you know,
yeah,
that type of stuff. I mean, yeah, look, it's that stuff again. It's not like ultra concerned about it, but yeah. So, all right. Nope. So we can get into more, like I said, on the next like actual episode that we do. I mean, I know this was like an hour long or whatever, but you know, we'll do an episode where we talk about Falcon and Winter Soldier, first episode, and we kind of dig in a little bit more on this and more on like the future of like if they're, you know, what this means, right? What does this mean for the future? There's a lot of buzz and a lot of hype for this thing, man. And there's a lot of reaction. A lot of people are talking. And I just don't know that we're at a time where these studios should be thinking about leaving any money on the table, especially after what they just went through for the last year and with these streaming services. So we can get into that on the next episode.
Yeah. I have been flip-flopping like a fish. On like whether or not this becomes a thing, because if you want to make money, you gotta spend money, and he ain't gonna work for free the next time. So yeah.
So on that note, we'll get out of here for this this little special edition thing, and we'll probably see everybody at the regular time and channel.
Absolutely. All right, folks. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you soon.